You have affected my life, you know, dramatically. I've always prided myself on health, as I've talked about. I've always had tons of energy. But your work gave me my reserves back. And I just want people to know that not only have you had a dramatic effect on my life and hundreds of thousands of other people, but I went to Dr. Neil Solomon. Some of you who are part of our Master University probably remember Dr. Solomon. He's used to be head of nutrition at Johns Hopkins University. And also, he's the head of the United Nations Aging Council, and I think the council on head of the Council on Health and Science. And I asked him if he would come see you, because I said, some of the things this man has shown me are mind-boggling to me, but I don't have your medical background. Please come check it out. Tell me what you think. I've experienced this stuff, but maybe it's anecdotal. I've seen a change in my blood that's so dramatic, and I feel the change. And he promised me he'd come out and spend 2 hours with you, but as you know, he spent 2 days. And he ate your food, and he didn't want to leave, and he came back and said, Tony, my God, he has shown me things in the blood that I have not seen in 25-plus years. He said, this is extraordinary what this man is doing, and I know he's going to try and set up now this new study at Johns Hopkins and also, I guess, at Harvard to support some of the new discoveries you've made. But I just want to ask you, first, how do you become the guy that lives staring through a microscope and discovers these patterns about the blood that can change people's lives? I mean, where did this start for you? Maybe we should just start with that.
Well, it started at a very young age when I was about 6 years old. Rather than ordering or asking mom for the regular encyclopedias, I wanted the science encyclopedias.
Oh, that's interesting.
For Christmas, I asked for the Invisible Man so I could take out the parts of the body and put them back in again. I was ordering.
You're a scary fellow.
Yeah. I was asking mom and dad for college books, physiology books. They had some of the coolest pictures in them, you know, these little transparencies that you could just look at all the different parts and study how the body worked. And so Tony, it's been in my blood for a long, long time.
So to speak.
So to speak, right.
That's interesting. That's fascinating. Well, tell me something. You've made these discoveries. We'll talk about the discoveries. Let's just talk about something fundamental. Everybody out there would love to have more energy. And we live in a society where most people just don't have any energy. If there's any definition of society, it's lethargic, at least by my definition. Why do people struggle with having enough energy to make it through the day? What causes that? What's the basis of the challenge that we're seeing in most of society?
What I'm seeing in my research is what people don't perceive, and what I've learned through this research is that our foods need to be energetic, and we need to feed our bodies. Our bodies are bioelectrical, and we need to be providing those bioelectrical properties of foods that will not only nourish our bodies but provide energies. And so we're struggling for energies because our foods are basically dead. They contain no energy value, and now we can measure that energy values of different foods.
Yes, I guess traditionally in science we think of the value of foods and its caloric value. You look at it differently, I guess.
Well, not only caloric, but we look at carbohydrate or proteins and fats, and now we can look at whether a food is acid, and we're going to talk a little bit about that, or alkaline or base, or what the energy value of a food is. For example, an avocado would have an energy value of maybe 70 to 80 megahertz versus, let's say, a cooked food could be as low as 5 to 10 megahertz, and so the energy value would be considerably less.
And where that's important, I know in your research, is you've shown that different organs of the body overall have a certain amount of energy just to function at their peak. So I guess like the brain, the heart, some of the most, the liver are what, in the 60, 70 megahertz
right.
that you need to function?
Yeah.
But most people's diets, I guess, are eating things like hamburgers that are down at what level?
They're down about 3 to 5 megahertz. Chicken, the same, is down around 3 megahertz. In fact, as I measure cancer or tumors, when the body contains those tumors are measuring about 30 megahertz. And so
wow.
I perceive that death begins about 40 to 35 megahertz. And our diets, the American diet, is ranging between 10 to 30 megahertz. And so we're dragging, we're suffering from the energies that we need, and we're trying to stimulate our bodies through non-energetic foods, only getting the...
Like coffee and...
Exactly.
Right.
We're getting the sensation of energy, but it's an illusion. It's not real energy.
Right. So what we're really putting ourselves in a position is a deficit. It's like making deposits in the bank. If you need 70 megahertz to be at functional efficiency and you're only putting in 10 or 15 or 20, pretty soon you start to, I guess, drag down your nerve energy in your body. You start to pull. And pretty soon you're in a position where there's nothing to pull upon and you start to break down, I guess. Is that the metaphor?
Exactly. You're pulling. Rather than making energy deposits, you're making energy withdrawals.
Right.
And so when you're adding those foods, which are high in energy value, and this energy value can be measured in foods, between 70 megahertz up to 350 megahertz, you're going to be making deposits and you're energetic. These are the live organic raw foods or even fresh juices that are so energetic versus those that are pasteurized or processed or cooked, which we refer to as dead foods, have very little or no energetic value.
So while not all proteins are equal in their value to our body in terms of energy, not all fats are equally good or bad, and not all carbohydrates are, obviously. So you have a way of measuring that. Megahertz is a technical term to most people, but it's really a measure, I guess, of the electrical energy available within those foods. Is that correct?
Of that matter.
The
energy that it's emitting.
Right.
And that can also be visualized using Krillian photography. You can actually see the energy coming off that matter through this process of photography, and it's beautiful art.
I think it's fascinating because while we may not understand the electrical side, although some people have heard megahertz with their computer. I guess computers used to be about 150 megahertz, then they went to 2, and now some of the supercomputers, or not super, but some of the stronger computers have up to 500 megahertz. But most people don't know what it's like to have that kind of energy charge that's in their computer, even in their own body.
Everything starts working faster, just like those high-frequency computers. Your brain starts operating at those higher frequencies, so you start thinking better, processing better.
Right.
Everything within the human body electrically starts functioning better.
Well, I guess the brain sends messages to the body. These neurotransmitters are actually bioelectrical. Is that true?
That's correct.
All right. So in order for us to actually have our body functioning, we got to have that electrical circuit to complete the energy circuit so we can communicate, so everything functions. One of your products, it's a green drink that you have. Explain to me, what is this and what's the megahertz level here?
It's a concentration of grasses and leaves and stems that has a frequency, a harmonic frequency of 250 megahertz.
So this
and
is
higher.
Like when you say grasses, like wheatgrass is one of these.
Wheatgrass, barley grass, kamut grass, straw grass, oat grass.
Why is there so much energy available in these grasses?
Well, I perceive that the grasses absorb the light through a process known as photosynthesis.
Right.
And that light or energy is held within structures, molecular structures of chlorophyll. That's held by a center atom of magnesium. And so when we eat these grasses, we're actually transmitting energy and light to our bodies.
Right. Now, a lot of people for years have talked about wheatgrass. It became popularized, I think, about 10 or 15 years ago. But when I understand that they're not the same, in other words, I can juice my wheatgrass, and as soon as I do that, it starts to change the structure of it. It still has great value for me. But I guess you've done something with this to make sure that energy goes back in. In other words, I guess when you disturb something, you change the electrical activity of it, like juicing a grass as an example.
Exactly.
Can you explain that a little bit?
Well, any time you process anything, any food, any matter, you're going to disturb the energy value, and it's going to reduce in its harmonic frequency. And so that charge has to be put back on. And so we actually put that energy charge back upon that matter. Somewhat like if your battery is dead in your car, you get a fresh new battery, or you drive your car up and you bring the cables over and you re-jump your battery from the battery that's dead.
Right.
So recharge it or alkalize it.
So tell us, what is this acid-alkaline balance that we have to have? We all hear about pH.
Mm-hmm.
What the heck does this mean? How does it affect our health?
It's so critical. It represents what's going on from within. Our bodies are bathed in alkalinity. It's essential that our cells are bathed in this. We've talked about, or you probably know about, shampoos that have to be pH balanced.
Right.
Our skin has to be a specific pH balance. Our digestion, in order for that to be carried off properly, has to be in a proper pH. And so even batteries, we hear about alkaline batteries.
Right.
In fact, energy, alkaline batteries last longer because
sure.
They're energized and alkaline. And when they become deficient in that energy, they go to the opposite side. They become very acidic, and you see that corrosion or those acids literally seeping out of that battery. So that within our own bodies, when that acid builds up, it corrodes. 60,000 miles of our arteries and veins and all of our vessels. I mean, you can imagine how acid can corrode even marble.
Sure.
It does the same thing from within. So it's so important that we maintain the alkalinity of our, or the pH of our blood and our tissues and our lymphatic fluids. It's critical. In fact, just as critical as maintaining our temperature. Our body maintains at 98.6. It needs to be maintained. Our pH needs to be maintained. Our fluid pH of approximately 7.365.
Now, that's on a scale from 0 to 14. 14 is pure acid. Is that right?
Correct.
Or 0 is pure acid. Which side is it again?
0, is pure acid.
0 is pure acid, and 14 is pure alkalinity.
Right.
So if 6 or 7 is the middle, we have to be slightly more alkaline, I guess. But what people need to get from this, I think, more than anything else, is that we literally are rotting from the insides out by the acids that we create in our system. Most people's diets, they drink a lot of coffee, they eat a lot of meat, they smoke cigarettes, and then what's happening is their body's breaking down. Now, even if you don't do that, I know acid is created just by your emotional state. If you're really stressed out, you create acid. We have all these commercials now where the guy says, I'm going to eat this hot dog and I'm going to eat this chili and all the stuff that's going to destroy my body, but I'm going to have this antacid first, so now I can go ahead and torture myself and I won't feel it anymore. It's bizarre. So we know inherently about acid, but we don't understand how our diets really affect it. And even me, I was eating really well, but my white blood cells are ripped open because I was going full tilt, never sleeping, full intensity, full passion, never allowing my body to balance itself, and certainly not providing enough alkalinity.
Mm-hmm.
So explain to us then, what does the acid do to the energy in the body? Because you were explaining to me before about what it does. I've seen it, what it does to the electrical energy around a cell.
Well, acids are the expression when matter breaks down, and it carries a positive charge. And that positive charge acts like glue. It's very, very sticky. And so when that acid is present, it makes our cells stick together. When our cells stick together, then we have symptomologies of muddled thinking or slow reactions or forgetfulness or cold hands or cold feet.
Because the circulation,
is down. Because cells have to go into the capillary single file. And so if we're producing too much acid, utilizing up our buffers, our alkalizing pools, our elemental pools, our fat pools or our protein pools, which help to neutralize these acids, if those are being used up through not replacing them, okay, through a good diet, then these acids will actually start binding cells together, which will cause oxygen deprivation that can lead to a numerous amount of symptomologies.
Well, the first symptomology is the lack of energy, and the second one is cells, very often when they don't have enough energy, everything gets weaker.
Right.
And on top of that, I know that one of the things that happens to cells when they don't get enough oxygen, obviously, is they mutate, and you see a breakdown of cells. Now, I know we'll talk in a few minutes about what your scientific discoveries are there, because it's quite extraordinary. But let's just talk about first, if we look at this, what do we do to make sure that we don't end up in this acid condition? Do we just take a bunch of these antacids?
Well, you probably remember Alka-Seltzer.
Right.
That was from all that acid food that we're producing. In fact, as I've mentioned, food breaks down either into an acid ash or to a base or an alkaline ash.
Okay.
And so we need to be choosing foods and lifestyles. Even our thoughts will affect the amount of acid in the system, which will cause cellular breakdown.
Right.
In fact, digestion is a process of cellular breakdown, fermentation. And we have to have elemental buffers, minerals like calcium and magnesium and zinc, sodium, to help neutralize these acids, or we start breaking down. And, of course, the body is continually trying to eliminate this acid through normal elimination. And if those things start breaking down or we have poor elimination, then acids start backing up, building kind of like a drain that's backing up. Things just start flowing through.
And so those poisons start to create an environment that's more and more polluted. And when that happens, I guess cells begin to adapt to the environment. Just like if we lived in an environment that was polluted here, we'd start to break down, we'd mutate, we'd get sick, or we'd die. Cells do the same thing, I guess.
Exactly. The terrain is so very, very important. So we deal with not any specific disease. We're dealing with an environmental condition.
Right.
We have cellular pollution within the fluids of our body. We have oxygen pollution. Cells produce energy when that energy is produced, there's waste products, which are acids that need to be eliminated.
And the body knows how to do that.
One of those is uric acid.
Sure.
And if that acid isn't eliminated, then it can lead to the symptomology of gout.
Right. Because the reason it doesn't get eliminated is people's nerve energy is so low because they haven't had enough energy brought into the body to function. But also, there's a cumulative effect, I guess, of all this acid in the system polluting the environment, healthy cells becoming more unhealthy, and then pretty soon your body's not working at its functional efficiency. And as a result, you get a buildup, and that buildup eventually has to get out of your system. If it comes out of your skin, it's one thing. If it comes between your toes, I guess it's another.
Mm-hmm.
But the basic cause of it seems to be very similar.
Exactly. It's very, very similar. So the symptoms that you're expressing are the manifestation, not the cause. The cause, this is a foundational theory, and one of my discoveries is due to an inverted way of living, eating, and thinking, which gives rise to physical or emotional disturbances, which gives rise to all of this acid which builds up into the system, which is manifested from cancer to AIDS to diabetes to toe fungus to heartburn to angina to onward and onward. These are just manifestations of physical and emotional disturbances that are brought on through the body trying to maintain this very sensitive balance between acid and alkaline.
Right, and it has to maintain or you would die. Now, one of the great metaphors that you gave my wife when you were describing this was when she had these parasites in her system, she immediately was panicked, and everybody told her, you've got to take all this medicine that kills the parasites. And you pointed out, listen, you got to make a healthy environment that you can kill the parasites and they'll just come back. And I think the metaphor you gave her was, if you're in an environment where there are lots of mosquitoes and you go kill off all the mosquitoes, but you still have this polluted water, stagnant water, you're going to have more mosquitoes again.
Right.
You know, and you're going to spend your whole life doing it. And plus, the poison you put to kill the mosquitoes starts to create another imbalance in your environment, because that's a poison too.
Right.
Or I think the other metaphor you also gave one of my kids was, they were just starting to cleanse, and I think you shared it with me and I shared it on with them, was they said, well, I'm doing pretty good. How come I still, you know, having this little challenge? And you said, well, if you clean out half your trash can, the flies still come back.
Right.
You know, you got to cleanse the system. The environment is everything. And we're even seeing in some of the HIV research, there's quite a bit of controversy about whether HIV is the source of AIDS anymore, because you've got Montagnier, you know, from the Pasteur Institute in France saying, well, HIV by itself can't do it. And in fact, they're all saying now there must be a cofactor, and they're also suggesting that HIV mutates, that it's changing.
Mm-hmm.
And so what's happening is they're finding as the environment and the body changes, cells change.
Mm-hmm.
Let's come back to a second before we talk about that, because I want to talk about some discoveries. I keep saying that, but I know it's technical, so I'm kind of waiting.
All right.
But let's do this. You helped me to get my body in balance. You did it by getting me to eat some foods, more of the foods that were more alkaline, but you also gave me some specific elements from my system that gave me some of my reserves back. Can you describe that?